The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the board, staff, underwriters, and donors of Voice of Vashon. Welcome to Adventures in Recovery. I'm Tom Walston, your host for the next half hour. I truly am looking forward to spending 30 minutes with you each and every Tuesday at 1:30 on the Voice of Vashon, while we explore the many ways that we can recover and move towards having a happier life. Now, my background includes, working for the past, actually more than 15 years or so, as a substance use disorder clinical supervisor. I've had the good fortune to work at Vashon Youth and Family Services for over 5 years, along with several committed therapists and clinicians that are passionate about their work. VYFS was founded in 1977, and we foster a thriving community of emotionally healthy and resilient children, youth, adults, and families. And we serve Vashon's most vulnerable populations and communities, particularly those who face systemic barriers to accessing services and or belong to groups historically excluded from resources, recovery, and power. Services and programming we offer include infant mental health, child, youth, and family counseling, and seniors counseling, Hispanic and Latinx support services, case management, substance use disorder assessments and treatments, homeless prevention, medical and ferry vouchers, and emergency financial assistance. So today we will be talking about how one defines recovery. One definition is the action or process of regaining position or control of something stolen or lost. Recovery is a process of change through which individuals improve their health and wellness, live a self-directed life, and strive to reach their full potential. So I want to remind you that recovery goes beyond just dealing with substances. After all, let's face it, we're all recovering from something. Actually, full disclosure, I am a person in long-term recovery from years and years of substance abuse. Now, one's recovery could also be from past emotional and or physical scars as well. It could be grief, meaning the loss of a parent or of someone close or even a pet or even a job. It could be grieving the loss of anything for that matter. How about recovery from a personal injury, physical or emotional? How about recovering from being abused, whether it be emotional, physical, or sexual? How about recovering from abandonment issues? Well, I have a guest with us today that's going to be helping us explore a lot more of that. And in the beginning of January, our topic was actually dry January. So those of you that decided to hop on board and make an attempt at having a dry January, for those of you that drink alcohol, I'm curious how you're doing with that. Do you need any tips on how to overcome some of the cravings and change your habits? Sometimes they say the only thing we have to change is our playmates, playgrounds, and playthings. So anyway, if we can be of assistance with you in that, and congratulations to those of you that have made it so far, and congratulations to those of you that are making the decision to start today. So I told you that we have a special guest today, and I'm very happy to introduce someone that I consider a very good friend, and I've known this gentleman for actually several years right now. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce to you Kenny Wells. Kenny, how you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me, Tom.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Kenny hails from, where do you live now? Puyallup, is that it?
That's it. Downtown Puyallup.
He's an in-town, downtown guy.
I say that having lived in Seattle many years in the city and just want to maintain that downtown area code, zip code, if you will.
That's your
not
comfort.
Not quite the same, though.
Inner city.
Yes.
Hey, Kenny, I was trying to think of how far back we go, and we can cover that in a couple of minutes, but I know that you've shared the fact that you are, in fact, a person in long-term recovery. Do you want to fill in our listeners with kind of where you think it all began or kind of where it all started?
Every time I consider or think about this, I always go back to childhood. Anytime I talk with somebody or this subject comes up, I can't help but go back there. In my experience, I feel a lot of who I am today, where I'm at, is a result of experiences and just the overall family unit on whole.
Mm. So knowing other people's patterns, did you grow up in what we call the nuclear household, a mom, a dad, and siblings?
I did. That's what's interesting. I did, whereas a lot of my friends, almost every one of them came from a divorced situation. My parents are still married, and I did grow up in a home with two parents and a sibling.
Now, was there any type of genetic predisposition with any of your use? And we'll get into what your DOCs were in a little bit, too.
Sure. From what I've kind of researched within my family, talking with different relatives, my grandma did a lot of genealogy research. I would say, yes, there's a genetic component predisposition to substance abuse. You can see it with a lot of my other family members, cousins, aunts, uncles, grandparents. So, yes, there's on both sides, mom's side and dad's side, there's definitely some issues there.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm really glad you're bringing up, because a lot of people that do have issues carry a lot of guilt and shame about it. And once they understand that they've inherited the inability to process in their bodies and in their brain the way alcohol enters the system and what it does once it's in there. And that's just alcohol.
Yep. Absolutely. And when we talk about substances, it's alcohol where I relate. There's just no room for me personally with alcohol. It's all or nothing, and I have many years without it. I don't count an exact date, but many, many years without it. But it's something that I know that I personally have to stay away from. There's no middle ground. It's all or nothing. And that's just been my experience with alcohol specifically.
So that was the alcohol. Were there a few other things involved too? Because sometimes it's kind of a combo platter, if you will.
There was, I guess you could say poly substance abuse in general, starting mm-hmm. adolescence and continuing on into my early 30s. A lot of opiate use. I was on a methadone program for some time, and that continued for, I'm going to say, 5-6 years. So really just downers was probably, I'd say, the drug of choice. You have benzodiazepines in there, Xanax, Valium, stuff of that nature. I remember getting sober from alcohol years back and still having a benzodiazepine prescription and doctors explaining, like, it's really just substituting alcohol in a pill form. It took me a while to understand that.
Mm-hmm.
But after detoxing off of that many years ago, you could see the similarities between that and alcohol for sure.
So you said that the benzo was prescribed by a doctor, and it brings up a question. Did the doctor know your full history with use?
They did. And I remember the first time being prescribed, it was actually when I was coming off of alcohol for the very first time. It was a pretty well-known psychiatrist in the Seattle area, and it was a Xanax prescription, and he definitely knew the history, because that's why I was seeing him, was for withdrawal symptoms, and that was the prescription, and that prescription ended up lasting, I want to say, probably the next 10 years.
Oh my gosh. They would just keep renewing your script.
Kept renewing it, and all the while I'm proud. I'm clean and sober from alcohol, but really the same thing was happening, just in a pill form now.
Which brings up another question. Were you taking it as prescribed, or were you kind of supplementing a little extra for good measure?
I pretty much took it as prescribed. It's always something I thought was really interesting with that drug. So my schooling and research education on it, it's a Schedule 4. I believe they moved it to Schedule 3 now, indicating the risk for abuse and dependence is really low if taken as prescribed. I did take it as prescribed. However, when you combine that with opiates, which I got into pretty quickly thereafter, it was a pretty powerful effect.
Interesting. Now, when you were involved with the methadone program, was that pretty tough to finally transition off of that? Because I've heard horror stories.
In my experience, coming off of benzodiazepines was probably the most difficult thing, more than opiates, more than alcohol, more than anything else. And for a long time, I kind of played with the methadone programs the best I could in terms of UA screening and whatnot. But eventually, it caught up to me, and I had to stop it. And it was a very, very difficult process. Luckily, I had some good doctors that were willing to go very slow with the taper, and that, I think, was to my benefit for sure.
Well, you know, just to share kind of a little, not really trivia, but it's some information with our listeners, that there's only two main drugs, and I consider alcohol a drug. It's just in liquid form. It's still a mind-altering substance. That the only two substances that a person can really die from on their withdrawal is benzodiazepines and alcohol. And often there's been a lot of people that have taken a combination unknowingly, usually, of maybe a benzo and had a couple drinks, went to bed, and they're no longer with us. It's a deadly combination. And sometimes people are not educated on some of the dangers of what kind of a combination like that can actually do to a person.
I remember, I think it was 2 to 3 deaths a month while on the methadone program from benzodiazepine and either the methadone and or alcohol. 2 to 3 deaths a month from that, just one clinic, from that combination of drugs. It wasn't until I actually saw that and experienced that with people that, oh yeah, this is serious. This is really something that can kill you.
Oh my God, and that was 2 to 3 a month within one clinic in Seattle, correct?
Correct.
Oh my gosh. Well, if that isn't external motivation to make some changes, I don't know what is. I mean, death is the ultimate goodbye. Interesting. So, alcohol, benzos, opioids, and today you're clean and sober. So what
today,
kind of
clean and sober? Yes.
Congratulations! I'll tell you what. Even if a person we've been talking about dry January, and if a person chose to hop on the bandwagon with us on that, kudos to all of you that are doing it. But some people might say, "Well, yeah, but I've only got one day." In recovery, we don't use the word only. If you have today, that's huge. We don't minimize anything as long as we're making an effort towards positive recovery. Would you agree?
I would agree 100%. Absolutely. That's why when I said early on, I don't have a specific date or account for that reason right there. I try to be mindful that it's not about a date or a number. It's just literally about the experience of being sober, even if it's just for that one day. That's the exact reason I don't count for what you just said.
Very good. That makes a lot of sense. So you got into recovery. Did something happen that where you there was a crossroads in your life where something was knocking at Kenny's door saying, you know, I think it's time?
I don't recall one specific event. I remember I was a dad, and I had a young elementary age child at the time, and that was a pretty big motivator. I remember always looking at her and thinking, here's a living, breathing, walking reason to do something different. So I attribute a lot to that experience. Nothing stands out as, like, you know, they talk about that moment, that experience, what's the terminology or the way that they say it, you've hit rock bottom, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that happened like that. Maybe it did. I just remember saying, I have to stop. This has to be done. And it was a procedure at the time I ended up doing, pretty well known now, but then it was not. It was what they called like a rapid detox. I remember I have to flying halfway across the country, very scary. And you go under sedation and they basically induce withdrawal detox while you're under. And that was that. I remember coming home and there was a really large mental, emotional piece that was not accounted for or discussed that I dealt with for probably about the next, I'm going to say, 2 years after that. So I'm technically, you know, withdrawn off of everything. I don't have anything in my system, but the mental piece that carried on, it was pretty difficult.
It's really interesting you brought that up, because I've talked to several people in recovery that will give up their substance of choice. And now that we're, and I say we because I fall into that category too, once we give up the substance, it allows all of the other issues to surface. And sometimes they don't cover that. It's like you were kind of hit with that sideways, it sounds like. And because I know in one of the 12-step programs, they talk about alcohol, for instance, was but a symptom. You know, most of us were in an abusive relationship with substances due to wanting to self-medicate, due to, it could be, as I said in the intro, it could be former abuse. It could be what we call ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. It could be a lot of different things. So you came to terms with the fact that you really needed to address some of the emotional / mental health issues, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And were you able to get professional help with that, or how did you address that?
Yeah, exactly. So I immediately sought the help of a psychologist, and it's the same lady I've been with ever since. We meet at least every 2 weeks. At first, it was once a week, but it's ongoing. It's still a process to go through, discuss, and talk about this. And not to sound, you know, pessimistic, but it doesn't ever really end in terms of the work or going through it. It does get easier, but it's always there, and there's always a process, and I'm trying to be mindful of that every day.
And we start developing skills to be able to not respond or react in the ways we used to. And sometimes it's about mindfulness. Sometimes it's about just basic coping skills. And another big part, I believe, is we almost have to expect those to happen. And that way we're prepared for them psychologically and mentally, how to deal with it when it does happen.
It's true. I remember jumping into schooling, formal schooling and education, and using that as a way to kind of keep my mind occupied and distracted, if you will. But it didn't fully do the trick. It's working with somebody consistently, processing, going through stuff, sometimes the same stuff over and over, and just working some kind of a program or a process. I've never worked fully the AA steps, but I've had to work, I don't want to say my own program, but a program of sorts with consistent practice, consistent work. And I know that when I've let that go and backed off, that's caused problems, that's caused trouble for me in my life.
I get it. And, you know, now that you mentioned AA, I want to remind our viewers that, you know, AA has saved a lot of lives, probably more than any other program out there, and it doesn't cost anything, and you can approach it either via Zoom nowadays or live meetings. Some people want the live meetings because they need that social contact and to meet other people. Now, on Vashon Island here, it's a little bit different environment. And it's because there's only 11,000 people on the whole island. And many, 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 many people know each other. So there's that anonymity aspect where, you know, maybe they don't want to show up at a meeting because they're going to run into their neighbors or this and that. I get that. But my philosophy is there are many, many roads to recovery. AA is one of them. There's another one called SMART Recovery. It's an acronym for Self-Managed Addictive Recovery Techniques or Trainings. And those are available on Zoom as well. Ever since COVID, a lot of things have gone Zoom, as we all know. There used to be a lot more live SMART Recovery meetings. But SMART Recovery is the type of thing where you might be, if you're at a live meeting, you might be having an issue with alcohol. Well, the next person sitting next to you might have an issue with overspending and shopping. The next person might have a gambling addiction. The next person might have a sex addiction. I mean, everybody's there just to change a certain behavior. So that's kind of all encompassing. There's another organization that actually, after years of recovery, I'm surprised I never heard of it. It's called Life Ring. So if anybody wants to access it and check out one of their meetings, it's just LifeRing.org. And these are actually run, as SMART is, by a trained therapist. So there's a little more connection in keeping the meeting on track. And there'll be different topics and this and that. So there's something for everybody. Okay, getting back to Kenny. So your little girl was really your inspiration to have a better life.
Yes, and absolutely.
So you've gone through, I mean, I want to hear more maybe when I see you next about this technique that was used for your own withdrawal. That's the first I've heard of that. Funny. So anyway, your little girl was your inspiration, because I believe our higher power or great spirit or creator speaks to us in many different ways. And your message came via your little girl.
It did. And it's emotional for me to talk about and to even discuss still at this point. I find myself as you're talking, kind of trying to, how can I distract or avoid maybe the next questions here, because I don't want to go too far. And it's still a process, if that makes sense.
That makes total sense. And I think the way you are presenting it to her, you do present it to her every single day, and just by the way you've chosen to live your life nowadays. You know, you learn certain principles in recovery that you start following, and people notice that. So what were you doing? For an occupation to carry you through this whole period of use?
So I spent a little bit of time in the military. That was really before all of this, but that experience allowed me to have GI Bill benefits. And when I got sober, I immediately went into school At first, it was a distraction. I needed to keep my mind occupied. That's been a big thing for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned into, it was an AAS in Social and Human Services. And I went for a bachelor's in psychology. And it just kept leading toward working with other human beings in a social and human service capacity. I figured, how can I do that best? I paired that with a formal business degree. And here I am today with an agency doing something that I care about, that matters to me, and that I can, you know, hopefully operate with some business ethics and values and morals.
So I just got the signal. We've only got 5 minutes left. And so this has really, really been interesting. So, Kenny, why don't you fast forward today? I'd be interested, and I know our listeners would too, to hear about what you have going on today.
Yep. So it's Alta Counseling and Testing Agency out of Tacoma, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Been around for about 15 years or so. This is where we first met, Tom. It was at Alta. I came there through a family law court matter as a client, and I remember working with you there many years ago. And I've stayed in contact with the agency ever since. Did some volunteer work for them through ADIS classes that they offer, and just recently purchased. And that's where I'm at today.
So now you actually, I mean, this is a full circle. You actually own your own agency that helps other people into recovery, not only the victims impact panels, the alcohol and drug information school, but intensive outpatient. I mean, what a full circle.
Yes.
What a full circle. And, you know, I remember back in the day, that was a long time ago, with full disclosure, I wasn't going to mention anything about us meeting in that type of environment. But it's interesting how, you know, the universe just kind of finds a way to keep us with the people that we need to be with. Because we always learn from others. We always grow from others, whether it be financially, emotionally, or even spiritually. So I just want to really, really show some gratitude to you, Kenny, for sharing with us today. And the fact of the matter is anybody that's seeking recovery in the Tacoma area, once again, the name of the agency is Alta, A-L-T-A, Alta Counseling, and it's just right on the corner of 6th and Sprague. So it's very centrally located. I know you're going through a huge growth spurt with the business right now, to where I know we're looking at some new facilities, and it's growing just as much as you are growing, my friend.
Yes, yes, we're trying.
Well, here's the deal. As Yoda would say, Kenny, there is no try. There is only do. And that's exactly what you are doing. You provide a safe housing. In fact, your place is so successful and so safe that there have been other agencies in the area that, for unfortunate reasons, have had to close down. And they have all the clients are now being directed over to Alta. So that's a big feather in your cap, my friend.
Yes, it's true. We try to just maintain that client-centered approach. There's not one size fits all for this. We approach each individual where they're at and try to meet them on their level. I know it sounds a little cliche, but we really try to do that with everybody that we work with.
And I think it's obvious. You're a man of integrity, and that passes right on to your business. So once again, I want to thank you very much. I look forward to having you on again sometime, Kenny. So ladies and gentlemen, once again, this was Kenny Wells, the owner of Alta Counseling and Testing in Tacoma, Washington. It's just a short ferry right away. So if you need an assessment, and maybe you don't want to do it at VYFS, Vashon Youth and Family Services, you can always go over and talk to Kenny at Alta. Thanks again, Kenny. Folks, enjoy your day. Be safe. And I love you all. Talk to you next time.